We have Martin Barbary, our chairman from Carmi, Illinois, Rob Elliott on the end, our first vice president, and our new CEO, Chris Novak. So again, good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for all your hard work keeping farmers like us informed and engaged. Before we take questions, I'd like to spotlight something important and the primary focus of a lot of our activity this week. As you interview most of our grower leaders, I expect you will hear one key message from them. We are committed to building profitable demand for corn. With increasing yields, we know it's important to have markets that increase as well, which explains our focus on ethanol in the years past, as the one market with the most potential for sizable growth and to handle that new supply. This is still the case, and we will work hard to defend the renewable fuel standard while building consumer demand for ethanol. We're actively engaged in this with the American Ethanol Partnership with NASCAR, where E15 has been used as fuel since the 2011 racing season, and they've been running over 6 million miles on E15. And we're working with industry to expand the availability in key markets with mid-level blends like E15. When you can see what's at stake for our farmers, it's clear this is why it's a top priority for national corn growers. At the same time, we want to stress the importance of two other markets, exports and livestock. When it comes to trade, for example, we'll fight to remove trade barriers and expand overseas markets for U.S. corn. We will support Trade Promotion Authority legislation and normalization of trade with Cuba, a market with great potential for U.S. corn and corn products. We need policies that give farmers greater access to markets and level the global playing field. We're working with the U.S. Grains Council in this area. Global markets need global rules consistently enforced. Beyond ethanol and trade, our third area of focus is building profitable demand for corn through livestock. I'm proud our new CEO has experience in both row crop and the livestock sectors. Chris gets it. And as he puts it, whereas today we see livestock producers as customers and they see us as suppliers, we want tomorrow to have them as our partners. This is already happening in programs such as the U.S. Farmers Ranchers Alliance through organizations like the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Together, we'll increase global demand for U.S. meat and dairy products, most of which are corn-fed. So again, our focus in these three areas is building on profitable demand for corn. When farmers succeed, our customers succeed, and America succeeds. So now, we'd be happy to answer any questions you have for us. Yes. We're working with other groups on that, obviously. We'd like to see one set of labeling standards throughout the country. Chris, if you want to pick up on that, I would defer that to you. But as an organization, we'd like to see one set of standards.
Well, and so NCGA is a partner with grocery retailers, with food manufacturers, other agricultural groups in the Coalition for Safe Food Labeling. And Congressman Pompeo, who's introduced the legislation, which is aimed at creating a federal standard for labels, which would move us away from this state-by-state checkered set of initiatives, regulations that has been discussed and proposed. And obviously we've seen Vermont move forward. What we know consumers need is solid, consistent information about the food that they consume. And we hear from time to time questions about different production practices and other things that consumers want on the label. And yet at the end of the day, what's important is that they have the nutritional information that they need, that they know if there is or is not an allergen. And therefore, GMO labeling, where we know that these products are safe, they're tested, they're approved around the world, becomes less of a priority. And that needs to be, though, established within a federal law, and we're hoping the Pompeo bill can do that.
Do you anticipate that to be introduced again this session?
Yes.
In the back.
Regulations might end up being written in regard to that.
Well, we don't know what regulations might end up being written. You know, I farm in Maryland on the Chesapeake Bay, where we have stringent nutrient management guidelines. We have been urging our farmers for years to take a proactive response into nutrient management and water quality. We think that they have. My experience with the Chesapeake Bay standard is Maryland farmers in Virginia and Pennsylvania have been going above and beyond when it comes to nutrient management plans. And we now in that area have the numbers that show that what farmers are doing is making a difference in water quality, and we're not the only culprits when it comes to pollution that's in water. So while that's starting to reach out towards the Midwest in areas like Iowa and Des Moines, we have been at the forefront in water quality. We have a water quality meeting coming up in March in Chicago to discuss problems just like that. Yes, sir.
Chip, does the National Corn Growers have a place at the table when it comes to the trait promotion authorities as far as what the rules are and what they expect in return before we go into a trade negotiation with company or country ABC?
Chris, would you like to handle that?
We do, Gail, and thank you for the question. Our staff in Washington met with Capitol Hill staff within the last 2 weeks to brief them on the importance of TPA and what these trade agreements mean to us. It is another coalition effort because certainly there are barriers and tariffs that are affecting corn farmers today as we look at the countries involved in TPP as well as the European Free Trade Agreement. But also equally important, the regulation or the limitations and market access challenges facing the livestock industry are pushing back from a corn on a corn farmers as well. So working together as an agricultural coalition to ensure that we are going to push Congress to first and foremost provide trade promotion authority to the president. Continue to work with USTR, USDA, and others. Ambassador Vetter will be here tomorrow to meet with producers and hear from them the needs. We'll have an opportunity to talk to Secretary Vilsack tomorrow as well. These are limited opportunities here, but the conversation is ongoing with USTR, USDA, as well as the White House from as far as what agriculture needs.
Yes, sir.
How can you build consumer demand for ethanol? What's your plan?
Well, we are doing what most farmers tend to do in the end is take matters in their own hands. We have a project called Prime the Pump that has been going on for about a year. What we're doing is we're building infrastructure with E15. We're going with major fuel retailers. It's been focused mainly in the Midwest. We just signed a company on the East Coast that has 460 retail locations. And what Prime the Pump does is we are helping pay for some of the infrastructure with these companies. And in return, they put E15 under the canopy of their pumps. And that's how we see that we're going to build demand in the short term for us. Long term, again, we need to build infrastructure. We need to make sure that the pumps at the fueling stations can handle, you know, mid-level blends. And again, National Corn Growers is in the middle of a plan right now that we're trying to come up with how we're going to do it. But again, it looks like we're going to have to take matters in our own hands and partner with the ethanol industry, corn farmers, and the retailers to put our product on the street. Yes, ma'am.
Chip, I didn't hear you mention as far as the U.S.
I didn't really want to.
Well, why not?
Well, again, and I was joking about not wanting to talk about it. That seems like all I've been talking about for 15 years. National Corn Growers has had the fortunate opportunity to meet with the EPA on several occasions. I have had the opportunity to host the EPA on my farm in late fall. I know and I think that any future regulations that are going to come out, we're going to be at one of the front seats in the row. I can guarantee you that because we've worked hard to position ourselves to be there. Are we going to stop the Clean Water Act? Nope. We will get more regulations. We're tasked, the people here and our organization, we're tasked with making sure that those regulations are something that we can actually deal with. As part of the Chesapeake Bay mandate, when we first got the mandate, we as farmers said there's no way we'll be able to keep farming the way that we are with all these regulations. Well, you know, here we are 2015. I'm standing here as National Corn Growers President saying that you can. Those regulations have probably made me a better farmer. They've made me more efficient. They've made me more cost efficient. But we've also made sure that we had a seat at the table as Maryland farmers to stop or pull back on some regulations that we've had to make them easier on farmers to implement. So that's what that's our plan with National Corn Growers, to make sure that we're proactive rather than reactive and start to document some of the things that we're doing as farmers now on our farms as far as buffer strips and runoff areas. We want to make sure that we document that, so when these regulations are being talked about, we have data and information to show folks at EPA that we are doing things on our own, that they don't need to regulate us the way they think they need to regulate us.
They pulled the interpretive rule. Are you hearing from them when? Are they just like starting over, or do you think they were going to have a final rule, or are you getting any feedback from what might come at this point?
Well, there will be a final rule. We don't know when that's going to be. They're not giving up. That's for sure, because that's what they're tasked to do. With the EPA, who knows what's going to come out or even when it'll come out. As we're waiting for a renewable volume number for 2014, you know, we're waiting, and when they do come out with more regulations or proposed regulations, we'll be there to get the best deal that we can for our farmers. Yes, sir. Well, again, we talked about this yesterday in our issues briefing about when we think the numbers will come out. We don't know. Your guess is as good as ours. We've been being told late spring. We were also told, last fall it would be late fall. So we're waiting impatiently, I guess you want to call it. We want to know that number as soon as we can, whether it's good or bad, so we can work diligently on what we need to do to make sure the ethanol industry stays strong and we provide another more market for our growers. And what was the second part of your question? The attacks?
There's a press conference today in D.C.
The Feinstein-Toomey bill dropped this morning. We're disheartened. We're discouraged that another attack has come about on the renewable fuel standard. We as a group can't understand why something that American farmers are growing in this country, we've proven that we're good at growing corn and that we can produce an abundant crop. We've got a 2 billion bushel carryover. We've got plenty of corn that can be used for ethanol. We have a hard time understanding why an agency within the U.S. government would want to pull back on something that's American grown and American used. And that's what our task is, again, is to promote the use of American ethanol. And we're doing that, again, through programs. I mentioned Prime the Pump, but we're doing that through NASCAR. And we feel like that is working. It's moving the needle a little bit.
So to kind of follow up, do you think that the effort, the lack of action by EPA, the types of action by EPA is giving more credence to the lawmakers trying to appeal the RFS?
That would be logical. If the EPA is pulling back, then that gives lawmakers that don't want to understand what we're trying to do or don't understand what we're trying to do. Again, that's our job, is to get to them and show them the benefits of using ethanol. So, it could be. I can't really answer that question. Anybody else want to take a stab at that? But
well, I think the one thing that we do know is while those efforts to repeal have been there in the past and certainly are likely to continue, and we certainly have seen the role that the oil industry has played in driving a large share of that congressional action and driving that message, At the same time, there are still a great number of champions for renewable fuels in Congress. And Iowa's new Senator Joni Ernst has met with the Iowa corn growers and with our NCGA staff and with CHIP and expressed her support for the renewable fuel standard. Chuck Grassley, my old boss, has been a champion for his entire time in the U.S. Senate in pushing. We know as we look at the numbers that we've got a core of support in Congress that will step forward and help ensure that their congressional members understand the amount of jobs, the amount of economic activity that the renewable fuel standard has brought to rural America. We know that we have a great story to tell environmentally that's not necessarily being heard right now, but we'll continue to push that message. So we're optimistic that we can protect the RFS because we've seen what it has meant for rural America.
Yes, sir. Yeah, for National Corn Growers, you know, we have a commitment through this year with NASCAR. We're going to keep it the same. We have an option of going again for one more year after this race season's over. We are talking about that with our grassroots, with our delegates that are here this week, and we'll continue to do that again in July. So it's not a decision that we've made yet, but so far our NASCAR experience has been a good one, and we think that it's reaching a lot of people that we wouldn't normally get to. And within the NASCAR alliance that we built with National Corn Growers, we have found that we've made other friends that are involved with NASCAR that we wouldn't normally partner with. Richard Childress has been a very vocal proponent of ethanol, along with his grandson that drives a number three car. He is an avid sportsman. We have taken to with some sportsmen's groups and conservation groups that we would not have normally got the opportunity to speak with. We now are, and what better way to get your message across through other people to form partnerships that you wouldn't normally partner. So the experience for us has been good to date. We think it's going to be another great year this year, and we'll make a decision here in the next several months on what we're going to do coming forward.
Chip, I know Martin's been involved. Does Martin, anything to add?
You're almost our NASCAR expert. Anything you want to add?
You know, we heard some numbers this morning that were just phenomenal for the investment we've made. It's just a multiple time return on that investment in the media impressions and the changes we made. When we first started, NASCAR fan, 50% of them knew what ethanol was. Now, virtually all know what it is. 70%+ of them approve use of ethanol in their cars, approve the use of E15. So, you know, we're making that known. Chip mentioned some of the Prime the Pump programs. One of the major ones we've talked about came from that company coming to a NASCAR event with us. So we've really used that program and we intend to use it further to promote our product.
Yes, sir. You weren't at one of our meetings the last couple
yeah.
of days, were you?
You've been hanging out with us, Roger.
Yeah, you've been on the wall somewhere.
Yeah,
we're starting a consumer marketing research effort now. It's not that we haven't been doing it, but we're gonna start a new project to try to get some more research to try to figure out what the consumer is thinking when he pulls up to the pump. Or if he's watching TV and sees a NASCAR race, what's he thinking about ethanol? So, yeah, again, that's something that we've been involved in a little bit, but we're going to put some focus on that to try to figure out what the consumer wants. And if he doesn't want ethanol, why and what we can do to change that mind. Yes, sir.
Any threat to the RFS is a threat we take very seriously. That's bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, our number one goal for the last several years is to protect the RFS. Yeah. That's what our grassroots, that's what our farmers, that's what our delegates from states tell us is what we need to protect is the RFS. There has been no better success story in the last 10 years for a corn farmer or American agriculture other than the RFS. So we're going to try to protect it no matter what. We'll continue to get attacks on it. We have handled them in the past, and we'll, again, like farmers always do, we'll figure out a way to make the best out of a bad situation.
Just to follow up on what Chip said, just as an example of how important RFS is, not only to U.S. corn growers but U.S. farmers, but we sit down and talk to Brazilian or Argentine farmers, one of the first questions is, how's the RFS doing? You got it protected. They understand the importance of the RFS as well to agriculture.
You guys want anything?
They understand the positive effect it's had on not only corn production and corn prices, but in agriculture profitability in general, worldwide.
Prices globally,
exactly.
And you know, their farmers are trying to, I don't know how to put this in the correct way, but they're trying to build their agricultural economy too, and they see that what the RFS has done for us, and they need to build their infrastructure. They need to get their farmers on solid footing, so they, you know, we've partnered with them in Maizol, and which has been a tremendous partnership between us and Brazil and Argentina, and they see the successes that we have, and they want those too. Whereas we find some successes they have, and we try to build off each other.
I think to the extent that you know, whether we're talking about increases in renewable sources of energy, whether we're talking about free trade agreements, what seems clear from history is that a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think our fellow producers around the world recognize that if we have new markets, if we are successful in growing demand for our crops, that will benefit a farmer in Brazil as a farmer in the United States.
Any other over here?
FMD and MAP funding, seeing a reduction from USDA. You mentioned trade as being one of your three points. How do you marry those two together, reducing those MAP and FMD funds for exports?
Christian, we'll tackle that.
Certainly, from a corn grower, a national corn grower standpoint, we work in close partnership with the U.S. Grains Council. U.S. Grains Council is the recipient of the market assistance program and foreign market development dollars that are coming from USDA. What U.S. Grains Council does is take the corn farmer checkoff dollars that are generated from all of our state associations, are directed to Grains Council, and then Grains Council will use that as matching dollars that are required within many of those programs. So as we see the reductions in MAP and FMD funds, certainly it puts more of the obligation on our corn checkoff programs, and yet those dollars are limited as well. So it's fighting for resources. Maintaining those programs is going to continue to be important to us. We'll continue to push the government that we can talk about dollars on the farm program side of the ledger, or we can make investments that will help us grow the market and help our producers get their income from the marketplace. I think that's always been the ideal for corn growers, and a small investment in FMD and MAP funds can help us create new markets that will help corn prices get us back to a point of profitability.
Anybody else? Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate it.